Good morning, good evening, and good afternoon. This is Alex with the Ascending Thoughts Podcast, coming to you live or later from Lynchburg, Virginia. We're all, well, I say we, but I'm back home and feels good to not be on the road again. So we're going to, Russ is still, you know, away from everything. So we're going to get him on here and get the podcast rolling. So we got a lot of the cool stuff planned for y'all today. We got a lot of good articles this week, kind of following up from last week, our great performance. So looking forward to getting to talking about some stuff today. Got some interesting questions. I think we got Russ on the line here too.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. All right. So
how's it going, man?
Pretty good, man.
That's good.
Oh, so I got a joke for you. I thought of it walking down the hall today. Okay, so this is how we're going to start the podcast now. I'm thinking, you know, we've talked about bro shirts and stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's my idea for a bro shirt. You got Jesus flexing with like a bunch of muscles, and the shirt says, "In him I'm made swole."
Oh my God. Genius.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Hey, yeah.
You need to make that, dude.
Yeah. I don't know how to make it, but yeah, I'll try.
Well, shoot, bro.
I might submit that to my buddy who makes t-shirts. See what he can do with this. Yeah, so that was my thought today.
I like it, man. Yeah. That would be a big hit. You might never have to work again in your life.
Well, maybe a couple months. Oh man. All right. So what we got planned today? I got to look at my list. So we got a good question. I don't know why I'm going to ask it to you, because I feel like you got a better answer for it. So we're going to start off with a question. Why do I have to give things up to follow God? Dude, I love that question. I'm not going to take credit for it. Yeah. That was totally your question, but I'm going to throw it out there to you.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So, I did think of the question, because I feel like it's something that a lot of, again, like, I feel like I've heard this question before. A lot of people ask it, and it's especially with, again, a lot of young people. And what I had in mind was, you know, like young people who are exposed to the church and God, but they're, you know, just enjoying life and doing whatever, you know, young people do. And maybe they see Christianity as sort of being restrictive, and, you know, they just feel like they wouldn't enjoy, you know, committing their lives to Christ and doing, you know, living a Christian life or whatever. And so that's kind of like the origin of the question. And so, you know, the answer is I think twofold. It's not, so why do I have to give things up to follow God? I think that there's different ways to answer it. One is just because, you know, Christ calls us to do that, you know, in the Bible. And so if you are a Christian and you're putting your faith in Christ and who he is, then, you know, quite simply, we just need to obey him, right? So when he calls us to, you know, pick up our cross and follow him, in the New Testament, not satisfy the desires of our flesh, things like that. You know, part of it is just obedience, and part of it is us wanting to obey because of what Christ did for us. Because he gave up, you know, glory with God and basically heaven to come down and die for us, and so he gave things up for us, and so that should make us want to give things up for him. So I think that's one way to look at it. And then the other way is a little bit more sort of commonsensical, logical, and it's the idea that anything that you love, you sacrifice for.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's true with anything. You know, if you love your job, you know, you're going to sacrifice things. You're going to give things up in order to succeed at that, to be good at your job. You know, it might be time with your family. It might be, you know, partying at night. It might be whatever, so that you're doing your work. You're going to give things up in order to accomplish that and to be good at it. And vice versa, you know, if you love your spouse, you're going to give things up in order to please her, you know, and so forth. And so this, it's kind of the same concept, the way that I think about it with God. It's, if you love God, then you're going to sacrifice for him. You're going to give things up that do not please him, you know, or that are obstacles that are going to hinder your devotion and are going to take you away from being close to him. So those are just a few. I mean, I think those are kind of the three ways that I would go about it. Is that, first of all, God, Jesus called us to give things up. Secondly, he gave things up for us, and so we should want to do it for him. And then the third one is just that commonsensical, like, you're always going to be giving something up, no matter what you do. And so it just kind of follows. You do the same thing with God.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with all those things. You know, and I'll add another thing in there too. It's not necessarily, it's all about how you frame it, you know, in my mind. If you frame it as giving things up, you're seeing it as a loss. But if you frame it as leveraging your time to set boundaries so you can focus more on God, and, you know, it's exactly like you said, you're making a priority. You spend time making a priority, what you think is a priority. You know, it's not giving things up if you're setting aside that time. If you're thinking about it in the way that I'm not giving up a thing, I'm making sure that I make this thing a priority. And that thing is Christ. Right. You know, it's reading the Bible. Right. It's praying. It's, right. You know, it's leveraging what we can do for him. You know, leveraging our time for him. So yeah, you know, that's kind of my two cents on that one. And it brings freedom.
Too, that kind of got me thinking too, is with Christianity, it's not like we're losing things, you know, like we are gaining an eternity. Like God has promised us so much more than what we give up, you know? And so it's not like we're losing, like we're giving things up, and but like we're following God into life, you know. And so really we're gaining by what we call giving things up, you know. And so like one common example I think is like when it comes to like premarital sex and like that kind of stuff, you know, that's one common thing that people don't want to give up, is to give up that pleasure. And, you know, God promises us something much greater, which is, you know, the right idea of what things were intended for, what's marriage intended for, you know, so that we can enjoy that much more, and have fulfillment in that, and have intimacy in Christ, and purity, and all of these things are actually stuff that we gain when we give things up that he asks us to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I appreciated definitely what you said there about don't think about it as just, you know, losing things or having things taken, but it's really you're gaining.
Yeah, and you know, I going off that practical example of premarital sex, I mean, that's a good one. I'm going to take it another direction slightly, but it's about that same boundary kind of thing. So, and you know, I'll bring it back to that too. But if you're in a position where you're, okay, so I have the freedom to sit and watch Netflix all day. What do I gain by that? Sure, I have freedom. Sure, cool. I can do that, and I have that freedom to do that. But am I using that time? Do I feel good at the end of the day if I've watched nothing but Netflix or Hulu or whatever? No, I don't feel good. But if I take time and I've marked out time to say, oh, I can watch a movie tonight after I've done X amount of work, I feel much better about watching that movie than I do about, you know, watching The Office for 6 hours in a row, you know? And so the same thing applies to premarital sex. You know, if you're in a you're in a relationship and you rush things and you're all of a sudden there at that, you know, at that junction and you're like, okay, cool. I'm free to have this thing, you know, I'm free to do this, and you do it and you feel empty, you know, you just feel empty because you have this experience, but you don't have anything that makes it substantive, you know?
Yeah.
So, and it's all,
like, what do they say with, like, a fish is most free when it's in water.
Yeah.
It's confined, you know, in the water, but that's what it needs to live.
Yeah. I'd never heard that before. That's cool.
Yeah. It's the same kind of thing. It's like, you can look at it as a restriction, but the restriction is really just what we need to thrive and to live.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, those are great points. I'm glad you asked that question this week. You know, I had another, you know, we talked about this earlier. I had another question, but it was kind of like, meh. But
yeah, you know, that's a good one too, man. We could probably tackle that next week.
Yeah, yeah. I like the idea. I think it would segue.
Next week for another good question.
Yeah, and we're not going to tell you at all what it is. Slightly, somewhat related to it. Would you say that?
No, it is, especially the kind of the end of what we talked about.
Yeah. All right. So that's a teaser for next week. So we're, you know, going away from our good segues, Russ, you posted an article this week, called When He Stood Before the Judge, and maybe we could segue this one somehow. I don't know. I don't want to segue it. So you wrote the article When He Stood Before the Judge. I read it, and I'll tell you my initial thoughts, and then I want to kind of ask you some questions about it and kind of what your place was. I'm pretty sure I'm remembering it right. So your article was basically like, more artistic in the sense of explaining the scene right before Jesus's, it's like a narrative explaining like what's going through Jesus's mind. You're really kind of immersed in what the process is, the emotions, the, you know, you're kind of empathetically able to feel the emotions that Jesus felt right before Pontius Pilate finds him guilty, guilty, but, you know, so he washes his hands of the whole affair and says, fine, you crucify him, whatever. To me, that was such a fresh take on the things that we usually put out that, I'm glad you picked it. When I first saw the list of what we're talking about today, I was like, oh, wait, what's that one again? And then it came to me. I was like, oh, man, that's the...
There's a twist to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, talk about the...
Explain?
Yeah, go ahead. Talk about the twist.
Yeah. Okay, so the way that it's set up is, like you were saying, it's when he stood before the judge, you know, I think the graphic that I chose has, like, Pontius Pilate with Jesus up in front of the crowd, and they're, you know, placing judgment on Jesus. And so I wrote it in the narrative, and basically it talks about, you know, him going through the streets and, like, people are all there and he's walking up to be judged. But then, just as they're going to place a judgment on him, and, you know, they call him a blasphemer, idolater or whatever, I forget.
Yeah.
But, like, just when they place the judgment, they actually declare him innocent. And you're like, the way that I did it, I wanted people to be like, all right, what? Like, he wasn't, that's not historical, you know, that's not biblical. What I have in mind is that you soon realize that it's not actually Jesus that's being talked about as the one in the trial, but it's actually you.
Yeah.
And then Jesus, and the person that you think is Pilate is actually Jesus. And so, like, it flips it around to where, you're expecting this, you know, Jesus to be judged by Pilate as guilty, even though he's innocent. But then it's actually you who's said to be innocent, even though you're actually guilty. And basically, I just got that from the idea that, like, the truth that, you know, Jesus took our place, and that you know, one day that we are going to go before the judge, you know, but because of what Jesus did for us, he's gonna be able to declare us innocent. It was that kind of like switching perspective that I was going for, and I was hoping that would be kind of the impactful part.
And I think the narrative, it drew me in, at least, you know, because it was mm-hmm. You get used to reading kind of the same things over and over. Not that what we're doing is, yeah, I'm not denigrating that at all. Kind of get in a habit, and it's refreshing to see something that's written slightly different and in another way. Because so it pulls you in a little bit more, and narrative pieces always pull you in more. Now, you know, I can argue back and forth, whatever. That's a different subject, but we can get to that in a minute, I guess. But, one of the interesting things that I thought, you know, the whole thing, you mentioned that we're going to be in front of a judge, but we're going to be in front of a judge that cares more about us than to just wash his hands of us and be done. He cares so much more about us that he gave his life for us, and he didn't just wash his hands to protect his own legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, Jesus was not concerned with his legacy. He was concerned with us. And, you know, and this thought literally just came to me. So it's a Jesus moment. I'm thinking, you know, that Pilate, he cared so little for Jesus and the Jews.
He was like, he tried to remove himself so much from the situation.
Yeah.
But the opposite is true with Jesus as a judge. He doesn't get any closer to the situation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Completely the opposite.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, I used to, and this is kind of the naivete of my youth, that I used to think, oh, well, he's not wanting a part of it. He doesn't want to be the one that's finding Jesus guilty. And I was like, oh, he's a good man. Well, hold on. Hold on there, past Alex. You're not so correct, you know.
Right.
You know, there's a lot more to that whole exchange. You know, he's saying, I care so little about you, and I care so little about this whole situation. I'm going to let this guilty man run free, even though I think it did bother him some, like, you know, from a justice standpoint. But he also, I'm not throwing Pilate under the bus. You know, that's some other person. But, you know, good thing about historians, we get to gossip about those in the past because they're dead. Sorry, that was a little side trail there. Anyway, but you know, he also removed himself from it, and it's just a remarkable thing to me to think about that to put it in the context of our judge who cares about us, who will find us guilty because he cares, because he is invested in the lives of man. You know.
Yeah.
And
I think too, the whole idea of judgment is something that we don't talk about. Like, we really remove ourselves from that whole scenario, and it's easy as Christians to forget, you know, just what it means for Jesus to have taken our place. Like, that we literally deserve to, you know, to go before a judge and be found guilty, and we deserve the cross, we deserve God's wrath. And, you know, I think that we kind of give lip service to it, like we say that we believe it, but the point, you know, one of the reasons that I wrote it this way is because I wanted to invoke the emotion there that comes with that feeling of like going before a judge and then expecting to be found guilty, but then you're not, you know, and just like trying to just make it real like that, you know.
Yeah, for real. So the only other time that I've ever been, you know, this is kind of a segue, not a great segue. it's kind of a side thought. The only other time I've been in front of a judge is when I thought I could win.
True.
You know, because it was traffic court, and I was like, oh, well, I'm totally not guilty of this, so I'm going to go to court. But that puts a whole new perspective on the whole justice part. You know, we go before the judge whether we're going to win or not.
Mm-hmm.
We can't pick and choose our battle then. But the good thing is we all stand before, but we all have the opportunity to to win, you know, ostensibly, you know, for lack of a better term, we have the opportunity to win. But we forget to emphasize that we are going to lose unless we are going there through Jesus.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of a weird segue, but you know, that's kind of my thought process on that. You know, I want the easy wins, and you know, we tend to want the easy wins, and we don't like to do things that are going to stretch us. But that's kind of my thoughts there.
Yeah, that's good.
So speaking of, this is going to be a good segue. Speaking of the judge, and you know, well, it's not going to be a great one. I knew we were going to drop off. I knew it.
We had a good streak going.
We're going to drop off like 40 points now. People are going to be like, oh man, these guys don't know how to segue an article. Because we're going to stop listening to them. Ugh. But anyway, so our must read of the week, it's a really good one. I'm intrigued by the title. And so it's "There Is a God and I'm Not Him" by Andrew DiNardo. I was skimming through this earlier. Dude, it's a really, well, I mean, you know, initially what pulled me in is, you know, as all sports fans, Rudy. you know, watching Lord of the Rings and, you know, chanting Rudy as he's carrying Frodo up the hill.
That's right.
So, yeah. Now,
oh, man. Two classics, man. Those are good movies.
Yeah, all of our listeners are going to have to go. Rudy. Yeah, they're going to have to go watch Lord of the Rings and cheer Rudy on as he's carrying Frodo up the hill. Shout out to Sean Astin out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. So, Russ, let me start off with this. What sparked you to what are your initial takes from this, other than, you know, kind of our Rudy jokes? What kind of like stood out to you as kind of a, I don't know, interesting part of this article?
Yeah. Just the way that it's so simple, but profound at the same time, you know? Like, those two truths can go a long ways in your Christian walk and helping you, you know, understand things and answer questions that you have and with doubts and everything. Like, there is a God, and I am not Him. So it just reminded me of, like, a lot of the both and stuff that we talk about.
Right,
you know, and, like, And I just really appreciated a lot of what he wrote, and how he related it to pride too, and how we try to we act like we're God a lot of the time.
Oh yeah.
And it really is true. Like, there's one paragraph that stood out to me, and if you don't mind, I'd just kind of read it. Like to read it.
Yeah, go for it.
It's kind of here at the near the end, but. He says, rather than make way for Jesus, we promote ourselves to ringleader. If you are anything like me, you do this like clockwork. It is rare that I find myself not looking to stand in as the interim savior. I have seen this play out most in relationships with others. A people pleaser to a fault, I love to convince myself that I hold things together. In friendships, I always imagine dystopias in which all of my friends abandon one another because I have failed to bring them together. In dating relationships, I look to rescue. These selfish acts do not honor God. God is our sole rescue. Only in God are meaningful relationships found and edified. Our pride is out in the open. It ensnares us. It captivates us and always has. It is what Adam and Eve fell to in the garden. It is what the disciples were ridden with. So, like, I just really related to that, especially a lot of the personal stuff that he kind of wrote in there. Like, I don't know, did you relate to that part too?
You know, I actually resonate with that part a lot more than what you might realize. I actually wrote an article, I guess it was before we started really going hard and heavy with Ascending Thoughts, but it was called Building My Towers of Babel. And we might feature that one day, because I think that was a good one.
Yeah, that'd be good.
But you know, I deal with the same thing. You know, I want to build my own kingdom and say, God, that's okay. I love you, but I've got this, you know, and I'm one that's quick to build up my own kingdom because I don't want to feel that I've made God work for something for me. And, but I mean, how silly is that? You know, how really silly is that, that I'm trying to please God by being and building a better kingdom of my own, when he's just saying, stop, give up your kingdom and come to me. There's no sense in your kingdom. Your kingdom's going to fall. Your kingdom's going to be burned away when you die. It's not going to last, you know? And that's happened even to the best of people. Where's King David's kingdom today? You know, and he was probably arguably one of the best kings ever, you know, his kingdom fell and he, you know, and he was probably, you know, he's the one through the line of him is through which Jesus came, is through what Jesus came, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. You got it. But you know, other than that, man, I'm going back to Rudy, but a little bit more serious, but, some of y'all may remember the part in the movie, but he quotes it where Rudy's like, hey, maybe I've not prayed enough. And then he's talking to Father Kavanaugh and he says, maybe that's not the problem. Praying something we do in our time. The answers come in God's time. And then, you know, kind of they get to the bottom of it. And Father Kavanaugh says, in 35 years of religious study, I've only come up with two incontrovertible facts. There is a God and I'm not him. And then, you know, this is somebody that's dealt with religious stuff forever, but that still, when I watch the movie and when I'm reading it here, it still gives me those same emotions that if we can study Jesus all we want, we can study God all we want, and we're going to come down to these same two conclusions, that there is a God and I'm not him, that we're not him. None of us are him. None of us can build a kingdom like he has. None of us can save ourselves. None of us can do any of these things that he came to do. No matter how hard we try. And, you know, Russ, you and I talk about this a lot. You know, there's no such thing as a good man. None. Yeah. We like to say, oh, well, he's a good guy, or she's a good girl, she's a great girl, whatever. And talk about their moral upstandingness. That's nonsense, because in the face of the Lord, none of us are righteous. And, you know, I've got a book called How to Be Good. It's not religious at all, but it exposes how silly it is to try to dabble in being good, because you still come off as being somewhat, you know, not good. You know, you turn into a jerk.
Yeah. Well, I think in that paragraph that I read, he really exposes some of that, because a lot of what he writes, those things are noble pursuits, you know, like I'm trying to see what, trying to please people, being a people pleaser, trying to hold friendships together, you know, trying to be upstanding in a relationship. Like, those are all noble things, but they become so, like, when we're just left to ourselves, they become so, you know, I don't know, perverted or whatever in our minds, that they eventually, we kind of make ourselves in control of them. Like, we become God in those situations.
Yeah.
And so it's that, like, that constant tension there between trying to be Christ-like but not be God, like Christ-like in the sense of, like, being humble and you know, trying to lift others up and you know, serving others. So it's, I think, in order to combat this, we really have to put ourselves, we should not only try to be humble, but I think put ourselves in humble positions.
Right.
To remind ourselves.
Yeah. You know, put us in positions where we have to say, look, I can't just rely on me. I gotta do something else. I gotta say, look, I can only go so far. God, you gotta take me the rest of the way. And that's where the phrase, I believe, help my unbelief, has meant so much to me, because I've felt so incapable of even following God in periods of my life and believing in things. And I'm saying, Lord, I believe, I just help me get further, you know? And it's all I can all I can pray. And it's just me trying to say to God, help me get to where you are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How can I get to where you are?
Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So you have any more thoughts on that one, man?
everyone just needs to go read it.
Yeah, and then go watch Rudy.
And then go watch Rudy.
Oh, yeah. Man. Dude, I want to watch Rudy right now.
But yeah, I know.
I mean, I'm going to wait till after we... That. Yeah, I'll wait till we get done with the podcast, though. I don't want people to be like,
"Oh, don't start it now." That wouldn't be cool.
Yeah, yeah, that would be disrespectful, you know. Because then everybody
confusing for people.
Yeah, then they hear, you know, Rudy doing Rudy things. I can't even remember how the movie starts. To be fair,
I don't either. It's been a long time.
I mean, I just whatever. We're gonna get off topic on Rudy.
Anyways, yeah.
So.
Anyway, segue. Here we go.
Ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-bum. So our most popular on the web, this week, we did two last week, but we're only doing one this week. Just because, you know, we're trying to be simple. So the one this week is "Stop Over Spiritualizing Calling," by Bethany Jenkins. And I thought this one was a really good one. You know, because sometimes we put so much emphasis on being called to things and saying, "Well, I'm called to teach, so that's what I'm going to do." And I'll be real with all y'all. This is kind of where I'm at. This is how I'll start out with this. I'm not going to go on the article yet, but I've felt for years that my calling is to teach, but it's been years since I've been in the classroom, you know. But, you know, I felt so alive in the classroom, teaching and interacting with students. You know, that's where I thought I was supposed to be. And I still feel so much in my heart that's where I'm supposed to be. But I'm not in a classroom. I'm not teaching in a classroom. I'm not interacting with students in that way. So I got to accept that God's calling on my life is either preparing me to go back to that, or it's to be in the season where I'm at, doing things the way I need to do them. You know, as much as God's laid a desire on my heart to be in the classroom and to teach and to mold lives, I got to realize David was in without a throne for 40 years, being groomed to be the king of Israel. You know, he had to go through tough times and a sculpting period to be where he needed to be to lead the kingdom of Israel. You know, and how can I have the hubris to say, "Well, I'm called, I'm equipped." Well, not necessarily. You know, I may be called, but I'm not equipped. So that kind of, I want to segue that into what Bethany talks about in an article. Let's see. Ah, here it is. So she talks about God being more concerned with how we work than what career we have. So, and that spoke volumes to me, because I'm in the season of trying to do the best with what I have. So I take the talent that God's given me and the things that God's given me and doing the best with them as what I can. Being on the move or taking little stuff, simplifying those things, taking my finances and structuring them in a way that they can be pleasing to God, and you know, all of that. And I'm really basing this out of the biblical principle of be faithful with the little and he'll give you the big, you know. And I'm just saying, Lord, let me be good now with what you've given me, instead of saying, "Well, I'll be better later once you give me the other stuff." And, you know, that was my attitude, even though I didn't want to admit it. And so it's something that I really need to be careful about. And so I'm taking a very thoughtful step kind of in that same thing, that I'm not just concerned with what I'm doing, but I'm concerned with how I'm doing it. And not to, I don't know what I'm trying to say, you know, kind of talk bad about what I'm doing or talk down about what I'm doing, as in like, I'm not where I need to be. And I know you could probably feel a bit like this too. Like, and it's just this season we're in, because we're training for something else down the road, you know, and it's easy to feel that way in, you know, our mid-20s, preparing ourselves for something down the road, but also when we see the people around us settled in their jobs, you know.
Right.
So I'm gonna hand it over to you. What thoughts do you might you have on that kind of topic? There's a lot more in the article, by the way, but
sure. Yeah, I mean, the thing that really comes to mind for me is just that it's, I think, a very comforting thing to know that it's, like she says, it's not about what it is that you do, but it's how you do it that is glorifying to God. And it's easy to get, you know, depressed or just feel like you're doing something wrong if you're in a job or your occupation is something where it's, you don't feel like you're directly impacting people, or you don't feel like you're doing what, you know, you should be doing or what God wants you to be doing. But it's very freeing to know that God honestly could probably care less about the job that you're doing, but he really does care about, like, your work ethic and how you go about it and how you can honor him in it, you know. And I think that's just a weight off of a lot of people's shoulders, and, you know, my shoulders, like you were saying about what we're doing right now is, you know, kind of the interim of, you know, to, it's not where we want to be eventually, but we can still honor God doing what we're doing right now. I really appreciated it. I think for that reason. And that's not to say that you shouldn't, you know, pursue what you're passionate about, but you should, but that shouldn't be like the sort of make or break, you know, how you feel with your calling by God, you know? It was just a good, like, redirect of where your focus should be.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I've had conversations with, you know, the job I'm doing now, with, you know, good friends, lifelong friends that I've had from back home. And, you know, he's working through a PhD program. And he's like, "Are you happy doing what you're doing?" And I said, "Well, I mean, physically, the stuff that I'm doing, not necessarily, it doesn't bring me great joy to do that, but the things that I'm learning through it." And okay, to be fair, it took me time to get from that point to where, what I'm getting ready to say. But the things I'm learning through the job are preparing me for something down the road that will help make me a better person, or help me be better at my job, you know. And it's more about me being in a place that both loves me for who I am, and, you know, being able to grow spiritually through all of that, you know. So, you know, you can struggle with your actual vocation, but remember, at the end of the day, it's not about what you do, it's about who you want to be.
So yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So those are kind of my thoughts on that article. I mean, we took like one sentence from it, but there's so much to it. So I suggest going and reading that. That's Stop Over-Spiritualizing Calling by Bethany Jenkins. That's on the Gospel Coalition. I'm going to kind of run through some of the stuff that we've talked about today. You know, our must read is by Andrew DiNardo, and that's "There Is a God and I'm Not Him," a quote from Rudy, by the way. And then Russ, we had your article, "When He Stood Before the Judge," and so those last ones are both available on sendingthoughtsblog.wordpress.com, so feel free to go check those out. Those are under the articles tab at the top of the page. Also, our featured one of today, which is Friday, is a good one that I read. I've really grown to love Carly's stuff, Carly Glenn. She writes in a way that really kind of resonates with me. She always hits on a subject that I enjoy. So go check hers out. I can't remember what it was. Hold on. Know Your Strength.
Yep,
there it is. Strength. Know Your Strength. It was a really good one, so go check that out. That's at ascendingthoughtsblog.wordpress.com. Go check that out. That's our featured article of the day. Today's Friday, so if you check this out after that, then it's going to be on our articles page. Again, if you like to interact with us, hit us up on Twitter at @ascend_thoughts. If you want to hit us up on Instagram, we're there at Ascending Thoughts. Right, Russ?
Yeah.
Okay, probably. Cool. If you want to reach out to us via email, hit us up at sendingthoughts1@gmail.com. If you have questions about videos that we've not come out with and would like to demand them and, you know, bar the door down to get videos, email us at ascendingthoughtsvideo@gmail.com. If you have suggestions for anything, like a question of the week, question you want to ask me and Russ, we would love to hear from you. Email it to either of those emails, preferably the ascendingthoughts1@gmail.com. That way we can put it on our podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If we're doing things right, tell us. If we're doing things wrong, probably don't tell us. Just kidding. You can tell us.
You can tell us that too.
Be on the lookout. I'm hoping to finish up our Men of Means video here soon. As always, check out the podcast every week, Men of Means. They're on SoundCloud and iTunes. Check us out every week. We're on iTunes and SoundCloud, hopefully Stitcher sometime soon. If you ever have any questions, feel free to email us. Check us out on Facebook at Ascending Thoughts. Russ, do you have any more questions, answers, comments?
No, I don't think so. Be on the lookout for more articles next week. We got some good people coming up. Just again, we encourage you to check in every day. There will be something new.
Yep, and our quote of the week, in him I am made swole. And on that bombshell, we're going to end it for today. All right, we'll catch y'all later. All right, peace.